Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today is one of the new format episodes where members of the Upgrade Collective, my annual membership group, where I'm teaching all of my books and all of my knowledge and structured courses with coaching support and dozens of phone calls with me and videos with me and things like that, where they're actually part of our live audience. And at the end of the show, we're going to take some questions from them. So thank you, Upgrade Collective members, for tuning in. It's one of the benefits you get by being a member, and there's a lot of them. If you're interested in this, go to ourupgradecollective.com and sign up. I'd love to see you there. There's a vibrant community of people all learning to be better every single day using biohacking and all sorts of other stuff, including stuff that we are going to talk about on the show today. You've heard me talk about sex pretty often on Bulletproof Radio, because there's these four F words that drive everything we do. There's fear comes first, food comes second, and another F word is the third one. Fertility, that's what you're thinking of, right? And there's friends, our supportive community. This is the order of operations for all life forms. And if you ignore the energy of sex, you actually won't perform the way you want to perform as a human being. Like, you want to show up for yourself and for the world. This stuff matters. And that's why we just did the sex energy series. And, you know, we talked about sexual fantasies from a scientific perspective. And today I'm picking that conversation up again with Alexandra Fine, who's a credentialed sexologist who has a master's in clinical psychology with a concentration in sex therapy from Columbia, who took that passion, see what I did there, and combined it with engineering to start a company that's really looking at how do we use tech to get more out of sex and to make it more satisfying. Alexandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here.
I saw what you did there.
Yeah.
This is one of those shows where I'm going to try my best to not let my inner seventh grader come out, but I usually fail. Just to be really clear on that.
Why hold it back? You know, I think that is like that inner child is so rejuvenating. And I think kind of like tapping into our curiosity and the silliness and playfulness of sex can be really, I don't know.
I thought holding back was something you wanted to do.
This is going to be fun.
I guess the question I have is, okay, you are, in addition to very well educated, you talk about something called the pleasure gap, which we're going to get into, but you also said, all right, I'm going to go out and partner with a woman engineer and we're going to make meticulously designed technology to improve sex pleasure. But I've talked to other people who are like, toys, maybe, you know, they're not going to do everything you want to do because they focus pleasure in the wrong place or because you become reliant and all that stuff. Why did you go in the direction of tech with all the things you could have done given the knowledge you have?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think for any issue that you have, tackling it holistically is really important. You know, I don't think sometimes it's just, you just need one thing to help you. I don't know. I can't think of a good analogy of a problem right now, but just because a tool isn't going to solve education necessarily, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have value and can help you on your journey and on your path. In fact, I think tools can in themselves be educating. So I think for me, especially because I wanted to be a sex therapist for a long time, I have my master's in clinical psychology. I was excited by working with one people one-on-one. But ultimately, I think I was so excited and I tend to be a little, I have a natural sense of urgency and I wanted to do more and I wanted to do it faster. And by creating tools, I can just touch more people. So I was really excited by the idea of like what I can do through the marketing and by creating a brand, not just the actual vibrators themselves. So yeah, I think that both being able to like impact more people through a brand, through capitalism, was really exciting to me. And then I also did feel, and we are now doing a lot of education and a lot of the other components that I think bringing them to the masses while therapists can only do things like one-on-one is really exciting to me.
The idea of building content and education as part of a brand is relatively new. We call it content-driven e-commerce. And certainly that's a big part of what I've done with Bulletproof. Like, guys, I'll teach you how to eat and I'll make stuff you want to eat, right? But the teaching has value in and of itself. And you've done some pretty crazy stuff. I mean, you're on the Forbes 30 Under 30. You were the first sex toy allowed on Kickstarter, which is a really hard thing to do because, see what I did there? Because lots of people are, I've been trying to do it forever, but they could never get away with it for some reason. What did you do to get Kickstarter to say, oh, this is actually like a high class product? Like, how did you do that? Because that's business-wise a very difficult bar.
Yeah, yeah. So we had a brand at the time. So we were already selling products. We had a website. There was like a visual component and understanding of what we were doing in the public space. And we were working, we actually honestly, our offices were down the block from Kickstarter. So we started having genuine relationships with the people who worked at Kickstarter. And when we would talk to them, you know, nobody individually had any issue with what we were doing. It was kind of like, oh, this is just our policy, you know, kind of stuff. So we read through their mission statement and we constructed a letter before we were about to launch our next campaign. And, you know, they are out there trying to help makers create products, content, that are going to make other people's lives better. And that's exactly what we were doing. So we really framed our ask and our like position in alignment with what they were doing. And they like immediately saw it. You know, we were like, look, we are women designing products that predominantly help people just like us have more fulfilling lives. This isn't about prurient behavior. This isn't about being lewd or crude. This is about living a healthy life. And that resonated with them. And within like 24 hours, they came back to us and were like, we'd love to work with you. And we'd love to understand how we can like open up this category in a way that still feels, you know, safe for people. And I think that's like something that's so fascinating about sex is on the one hand, you know, it's about creating safety and there's so much unsafety too, or unsafety. There's so much trauma fear. That really can fear. Yeah. Going back to your apps, there's so much fear in sex and some of it's really founded too. You know, I think some of us have our absolute worst experiences in a sexual space, as well as some of our most profound and beautiful experiences in an erotic consciousness. So to me, that is like the reason that we should be focusing on it. Yet I think that power that it holds is so scary for people.
I love that. So you're talking about sex being both shameful or fear-driven or fear-ridden for some people, and also being transcendent for other people. And it's that combination of the two states where it's one or the other or sometimes both. And as a trained sex therapist who's studied this, why is it like that? Do you have any theories? Like, what do they teach you in school about that?
Well, they don't teach you much about it in school. You know, like I have my master's in clinical psychology. So, you know, I definitely took all the courses that were interpersonal or related to sex, but ultimately a lot of like the act, like still don't talk too much more about like sexuality and how it like it comes up in our lives almost outside of the bedroom. One, I think that the power sex holds in all of us can be traumatic or transcendent for anybody. You know, I don't think it's necessarily these two groups of people. I think that like it has that power for all of us. And it's just kind of a matter of the experiences we have. There's lots of ancient wisdom around this, but I do think that we're tapping into a different state of consciousness that is incredibly somatic, really tied to our physical bodies so that those experiences that get like hardwired into us in a way that I think can both be really powerful and create like, you know, a bond, or be really traumatic. And for the rest of your life, you know, every time somebody touches you in a certain way, you like just cringe and it just brings you back to this like one awful moment. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I've definitely had both of those experiences.
So what's the role of solo play, masturbation, when you're looking at, okay, transcendent, traumatic, what changes when there's a partner or more than one partner in the room with you?
It's a great question. So much changes, of course. Like, it is, I think they're both really important. I think they both have their roles. I think it's very much like dancing alone or dancing with a partner. I think that you, of course, can really experience this rise of energy within you on your own and find a lot of healing and understanding and education about your body. But to be able to pass that energy back and forth between you and somebody else is, I think, a very cool experience that I think that it adds like this element of healing for me, simply because somebody else is witnessing my experience of pleasure and joy, and because I'm also bringing somebody else that experience simultaneously. So not that one is better or worse. I definitely find more time for the solo play, as I think many of us do. But they both really hold powerful places in our lives. But I do think that there's something about the empathy, the learning how to connect with another person, this back and forth that you have in non-solo sex, or in what I guess we call sex, that's really powerful and beautiful. You know, I do think that, like, we live in a world where we don't have to have sex in order to procreate. And I love asking a group of people, like, okay, who wants to live in that world? Nobody. Everybody wants to be having sex with somebody. Not everybody. That's not true. There's asexual. There's lots of people out there who don't. But I think the majority of us do. We want that connection.
So in sex, there's an act of being selfish, and there's an act of being of service to your partner. And we know that being of service puts you in a flow state. We also know that just sex puts you in a flow state. So there's all kinds of altered states that people go into. I've seen a study that something like 20% of people report having, you know, out of body experiences, you know, meeting God kind of things during sex, but their partner just sees them laying there twitching around. So people go
totally
places.
I definitely found God during sex, which is so funny because so many people feel like God is what prevented them from finding sex. Yet I'm like, that's where I was positive. We were like really connected.
I'm pretty sure that if you believe in God, then you believe that things were engineered by God and he made sex, or she made sex, depending on which God you're into.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I kind of like, you know, the concept of God, we can get in there. It's probably not the way, or my feeling that there's like this power that connects us all, that there's something up, yeah, like that we are all God, and maybe even, you know, I had that feeling, you know, during an orgasm once. And that really is definitely, I think, a big part of why I do what I do. And yeah, you know, you were talking about that back and forth too. I just kind of feel like that's really what it's all about, this push and pull in life. And then when you realize, like, oh, when it comes together, when the masculine and feminine kind of spin together in this beautiful way where it really becomes one, like, that's, there's just something there that's so powerful and beautiful and healing.
Sex is definitely cathartic for so many people. And, you know, there is an act of being vulnerable. There's an act of surrender at some point, the act of pushing and being selfish, and all of those all in kind of in order, but that end in a very high alpha brainwave state, which just so happens to be very effective at canceling out trauma. So that's one of the reasons that it can be really healing. And I'm curious, because you have a lot of data about how people are using toys. And if you go back, you know, 20 years, sex toys, pretty much they all, you know, smelled like cheap plastic and were not something that most people were, you know, that highly motivated to use. Just there were quality issues all over the place. In fact, I actually told one of the companies that wanted me to partner with them, I'm like, your product smells like a cheap sex toy. Like, it's not clean. So we don't want to be putting phthalates and all that stuff in products that are meant for humans. And so you clearly are using the high-end materials and all that stuff. But what I want to know is, for people who are buying nice toys like the Dame stuff, how many of them are for use with a partner versus for solo play? Do you actually get that data?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can tell you, like, well, we designed some with partners in mind more so than others, but here's the data I do have. 35% of my purchases come from people that Google thinks are men. So we definitely have a pretty strong male population that is a part of our community that's buying products from us to use with their partners. I believe something about 48% of people have used a sex toy with their partner or report using a sex toy with their partner. So it's definitely fairly common. And I also think it's like, what do we consider a toy or a tool? You know, I think that there's so many, of course, like we're talking about vibrators, but, you know, a candle, lighting, music, like all of these things are things that we use to change our experiences, to put us in the mood and help us connect. So,
and if you heard the interview about the largest survey ever done of people's sexual fantasies, that was a few episodes ago. People use all kinds of stuff. I had no idea.
I listened to so many of that. I listened to a few things in that series. I'll have to go listen to that one.
Yeah, that's probably one that would design four new products for you, including one with wiggly ears. And I'm kidding. I have no idea. There's definitely, I was kind of blown away. Like, I had no idea that there was such a high variety and it was so common, just all these different fantasies. But just, you know, seeing the data is really interesting to me to see what people are actually doing, because this isn't something you normally talk about at, you know, at a dinner party, unless it's really close friends and you're all pretty drunk. It's one of those things where it's a common behavior, but it's, you know, it's in the bedroom. So I feel like sharing knowledge about what people actually do is of service, because if nothing else, then people are like, oh, like maybe I'm not weird. Maybe this is just normal, even though we don't talk about it. And that seems important.
Mm-hmm. I also think, though, that like whatever we do is normal. You know, there's this constant idea that like, oh, am I broken? Like, you know, 70% of women need clitoral stimulation. In fact, a lot of the research shows that it's probably even higher than that in order to have an orgasm. And I will, yes, the data is very normalizing. People feel this feeling of like, oh my God, it's not just me when I tell them that figure. But whatever gets you off is wonderful. There's boundaries on that. But, you know, for the most part, it's okay if it is a little weird and it's not what the data says. It's okay if you don't want to have sex once a week. You know, the data says that that's like generally what is average. I will say the data also says that there's correlations between having sex once a week or more and being satisfied in your relationship and in your life. So that doesn't mean that's true for you.
Do you think cancel culture has negatively affected people's sex lives?
I think cancel culture is just, I got into such an argument the other day with a close friend about cancel culture. I think cancel culture, not canceling people, sometimes that's totally called for, but the culture of wanting to call people out versus wanting to call people in, I think is negatively affected everything. Or a lot of things. So yeah, I can see that relationship. I definitely also, I think that there's definitely, as we're going through this big societal shift that I think is really beautiful and cool and I'm excited to see, there's also some confusion around how, you know, I think Me Too has made a lot of men really afraid to initiate sexual experiences. And women also are like, do I want this? Do I not want this? Do I consent? Do I not consent? And I think that these are really important questions that we should be asking ourselves. I do also think that they're so important that we're asking ourselves this question. It also is definitely like creating a barrier. Like it's okay to hit a boundary. It's okay to have an experience that you don't love at the end. You know, it's okay to do something and then say, oh, you know what? Take your finger out of my butt. Turns out I don't like that. You know, like I learned that now. It doesn't mean that like, you know, something bad happened or that it's inherently traumatizing, it's like, okay to have experiences that we don't like and to learn from them.
The way I grew up, it's like one of the two partners would generally say, let's go have sex or do whatever. And the other one says yes or no. And it was always okay to ask. But I wouldn't want to be dating if I was 20 right now. I have no idea how I would be able to deal with that. That seems like normal behavior to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I mean, like, that is normal behavior. I do think that, you know, it's really just about learning how to read each other's body languages. And, you know, there's a lot more, there's so much information around it that information can almost like stop you from just listening to your body and like listening to this other person's body and connecting in a really like authentic way. That being said, like, these are great conversations, you know, like so many women, including myself, were sexually assaulted. And maybe if, you know, like, it is so much easier for me even just to say that sentence now than it was in 2010. So,
yeah. Because we removed a lot of the shame from it just by acknowledging that it happens. And, you know, just sexual assault is a bad thing. and the guys who don't participate in it, honestly, there's no way that we'd know about it unless a woman told us it was happening, right? Because if it's a secret, exactly, it's a secret. And so I'm intrigued, though. Because when we move past that and we're talking about just normal relationship initiation and things like that, you documented something called a pleasure gap.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what that is?
Women are 4 times more likely than men to say sex has been not at all pleasurable in the past year. Yeah. I mean, like, I think the reason why we really focus on pleasure over orgasm is because I think that orgasm isn't the only way of understanding pleasure.
Fair point.
I think I would argue it's a fairly male centric way of understanding pleasure, but that was an argument.
No, I've seen a few women orgasm in my day. They seem to like it.
No, they orgasm. And in fact, they can orgasm a lot more too. So yeah, just because they had an orgasm doesn't even mean that it was good sex for them. Their subjective experience of pleasure is different. And to just measure it, whether or not you had an orgasm, can be a little binary or reductive of our experience of pleasure. That being said, men are twice as likely to orgasm during a sexual experience than a woman. So, and I'm also being very binary in my male woman language here, but
it's okay, just if we're looking at statistics, how statistics work.
It's also what the research has been done in. You know, the research just hasn't been done with like sex versus gender in mind. They were just lumping it together for so long. And I am probably just talking about cis women and cis men.
Now, you talked about, or you had this idea for a wearable vibrator. How does that actually work?
So, I happen to have it. So this is our flagship product. It's called Eva. It's a hands-free clitoral vibrator that you can wear during sex. It has bendable wings that tuck underneath the labia majora. So like my mouth was a vagina and you could see me. And it pushes against, the labia, the outer labia. And that little bit of tension keeps it in place. So it provides clitoral stimulation, which we were just talking about is so important to women. And you can wear it while you're having penetrative sex with your partner. So we launched it on Indiegogo in 2014. We raised $575,000 in 45 days. Wow. Yeah, I went from like my parents being like, what are you doing? To like so proud. And yeah, this is the second iteration of it now that we sell. So it's called Eva, and there's really nothing else on the market like it. It's a fantastic product. If clitoral stimulation is something that you need in order to really experience the full potential of your pleasure. And I'm really, really proud of it.
All right, now I'm going to get my engineering side all happy. So you partnered with a mechanical engineer from MIT in order to do this. So did you guys actually like measure the frequency of vibrations against a set of clitorises to figure out like how intense and how time, many cycles per second? Like, how do you go about designing a science-based vibrator? Because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, like motor technology is fairly set. We definitely spent a lot of time trying to understand like, so there's like the frequency and amplitude of when you spin the motor. So a motor or what creates vibration, it's like a motor for anything, but then you put a weight on the motor and it spins the weight around, which is like the opposite of what you would want from any other motor. You'd want it to be balanced. Ours is not balanced very intentionally. So it's not just, it's a matter of cycles, which is like how often it goes and how fast it goes. So we will measure that. And then I believe it's called like a G, and you end up measuring like the G, which is a combination of them. And it's just like the experience of how
the G force, not the G spot.
Right. Yes, the G force to figure out like exactly how strong that motor is. But for us, like I would say a lot of the engineering kind of went into the wings and getting this product to stay in place. It was a little bit more of a mechanical engineering feat than it was necessarily the motor. Motor technologies, you know, we've continued to explore them as we've expanded our line to figure out like what motors do people like the most. I can tell you that like in my experience, whatever product you have, after you use it for a little bit, they're going to wish that it was a little bit stronger.
Kind of. So people wanted more strength there. Yeah, you mentioned definitely, I mean, you're going to use your own company's products just like I drink Bulletproof coffee all the time. But you mentioned your parents were like, what are you doing here? But you actually hired your mom as a product tester, right? What was that like?
Yeah. I mean, I actually did also hire and fire my mom, but my mom was a product tester. She, the quote I like to tell people is she said, well, if your daughter makes apple pie, you try the apple pie. So shout out to my mom. So there's other products on the market and she wasn't really sure. She doesn't love, I mean, gosh, sorry, mom. She doesn't, she is one of the 30%, not the 70%. So she really likes internal stimulation. And I got to have like this really amazing conversation with her about what she likes. And for me, it's totally fine as long as I don't really imagine her and my dad together, which is also kind of silly because it's getting really intense about my parents' life, but they're never going to listen to this, so it's fine, but they're no longer together. And I think that, you know, you want your parents to be having sex. Like, it is really beautiful. Or you want them to be, you know, whether it's having sex with each other or having sex and feeling good in the world, like, that's something that you want. You might not want to think about it in too much detail, and I think that's fine. But yeah, it was great to have my mom's experience documented. And she came back to me after trying the prototype and was very much like, I really see what you're trying to do and why this is going to be like a successful product.
I'm pretty sure that we have a biological drive once you hit about 13 or 14. Suddenly your parents become really stupid. And anyone else's parents are pretty smart. And we're wired to leave the tribe. Like, you have to be so fed up with your parents that you're willing to face lions, tigers, and bears to go to another tribe to spread your genes around. And that it's a biological imperative. And once you're about 23, 24, suddenly your parents are smart again. And like we do that so we don't get inbred in small tribes back when we were in tribes. I'm pretty sure that same wiring is at play where, you know, the idea of a teenager thinking about their parents, I'm just like, ew, that probably prevents all sorts of bad things from happening the way our sheep would let them happen because sheep don't have that. So
yeah, but
it's probably a good thing.
Is real big. So there's also that.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, but I agree. I hear what you're saying. It's good that it's hardwired into us. I also wonder if that's how, like, you know, we pass on our traumas. Like, I'm pregnant. I'm very excited to learn about all my flaws from my child. I think they'll be the best therapist I ever have.
Oh, you said you're pregnant? Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's so cool. My first book was on fertility, and it's such a big way to learn. One thing that's really interesting is that a lot of, especially women, experience, if something rough happened to you when you were a year old, when your child's a year old, it'll reactivate your traumas from when you were one. And when you were five, if something bad happened, yeah, when your kid's five, it'll just pop up in your life. And it's the weirdest thing, but I've heard that from so many parents. We've experienced that as well. And it doesn't have to be sexual trauma. It's any kind of trauma. You know,
any trauma, whatever. Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're like, why did I just lose it today? Like, go back. So there's all kinds of intergenerational stuff there that probably is tied up with sexual trauma as well as any other trauma. So pregnancy is an incredibly amazing time. Well, then I have to ask, sex toys while you're pregnant? Pros, cons?
Yes. Pros.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us, and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Sex toys while you're pregnant? Pros, cons?
Yes. Pros. I think that sex can be a little bit, well, one, everybody experiences their own changes in their sexuality, in their libido, in their physical experience of sex while they're pregnant. I do think that it can be a little bit more uncomfortable, can be harder to do certain positions. And a lot of women do report having just a harder time orgasming, especially in their later, like in the third trimester. So having some extra oomph can be really effective. I've been finding them really helpful too, even from earlier, just because like I was actually really uncomfortable in first trimester, just more so than I am now. So not wanting to do certain positions and being able to kind of rely on something extra was really helpful for me and my partner to stay connected and still feel good.
That's fantastic. It's usually the second trimester is pretty comfortable. The third trimester, not so much. So you're following.
I'm not there yet.
as a first time mom, that's kind of how it usually works, depending on all sorts of variables. The stuff you learn writing a fertility book is a lot, but I wrote the book because my wife was infertile when we met. So, you know, that was hackable. And those are things that oftentimes you don't talk about because also people are like, ew. And, oh, I'm getting a comment from Mona, says your hair is back on the mic. There you go. Thank you, Mona. I love having a live audience. Helpful, guys.
Thank you, Mona.
Now, share with me some things about sex and pleasure and longevity, because there's some studies about that. Have you read those?
Yeah, a little bit. I know that there's some research that says that having sex will increase the longevity of your life. I think that like in eight, right? That's what we're referring to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in Taoism, the idea that like your qi is your life force, like your sexual energy is where you continue to create. It's literally how we create other human beings. I think that there's not just scientific, but there's also ancient wisdom that points to this. I definitely feel like it keeps me young, right? Like sex isn't something we need to do to stay alive, but it is something we certainly do to feel alive. And the way we feel alive when we're having sex, to me, it just makes so much sense that would then also lead to having a fuller and longer life. but I want, Dave, do you know more about the research? Tell me more.
I mean, I've looked at it a lot, and the Taoists, and I love that you bring this up, they say for men, there's an equation, and it's age in years minus 7 divided by 4. And don't ejaculate more often than that number of days if you want to maintain your health. And if you want to live a long time, just ejaculate once a month or less and keep your male orgasm to less than an hour. And so I'm like, I have to disprove this, of course. So I spent a year following those rules and testing my daily happiness and discovered, yes, there is an orgasm hangover for men. But the Taoists would write for women that they walk away undiminished. Like, it actually builds qi for women to have pleasure and orgasms. And for guys, it is depleting of qi. It doesn't mean you shouldn't have sex a lot. You can build qi with
life
sex.
Force.
Yeah.
Right? Just no, don't quite finish. Don't quite finish. They also talk about being able to orgasm within. So you hold in your ejaculation. I don't know if you've been able to accomplish that. But that is in the readings.
It's in the readings, and I thought it was all BS. I was like, I'm going to disprove this with biohacking and technology, and I believe they're totally right. But I can also say that whole part about, you know, have an orgasm for, as a man, you know, for less than an hour. I'm like, what kind of garbage is that? And having had ones that last for at least 20 minutes, it's actually not even pleasant. I'm like, could it just stop already? Like I'm going to, you know, like my abs hurt. I'm done. But your body's like, you're not done. And I'm kind of afraid of that at this point. So there's all kinds of stuff going on that's longevity related, but there's a study that says the size of difference in well-being for people who have sex once a week versus once a month is greater than the difference in well-being between making 75,000 a year and making 25,000 a year. In other words, if you have sex once a week and you make $25,000 a year, you're likely to have better well-being than someone who makes three times as much and doesn't get laid. And that's why I'm a fan of toys or whatever else you need in order to bring pleasure into your life. Because I think it's incredibly important, because people who don't have well-being act like jerks all the time. And we're building a world of people who are wired to be nice to each other.
It literally, it just extends beyond the bedroom too. You know, if you can get better and better at finding pleasure with your partner, I'm telling you, the sky will actually be bluer to you and the world will smell better. I just think that you're cultivating, you're practicing your ability to tap into a pleasurable state, and that will, that leaves the bedroom. It's really, it's wild that we don't talk about it as part of our a wellness practice.
At least we can talk about getting a good night's sleep now, which for a long time wasn't even part of it. In fact, I interviewed Montauk Chia a while back. We talked about this as well, which was really fun. And something else that goes hand in hand with that. So if you're a guy listening to this and you're saying, all right, you know, how could I possibly have sex and not have an orgasm or not ejaculate? You guys make a vibrator that you actually put on your fingers. So if you're saying, okay, this time I'm not going to ejaculate, it comes down to more like, okay, now I have, I'm going to say, a toy to play with. Now you have a woman who, you know, clearly, or maybe a man, whatever, you know, whatever your relationship is like. But now, since you're like, I've had enough pleasure for right now, what do I do? And then it becomes a little bit more playful and a little bit more partner focused.
Yes.
And it's more of an act of service, right? And then you're like, oh, you can play that like a violin. And like, you end up practicing on that because you're not practicing the selfish part of it, because you're like, I've had enough. And if I go any further, I'm going to ruin the experiment. And yes, when I publish my data, I'm like, yeah, I was going to go 30 days. I only did 24 days. And how do you put that in an experiment? Like, oops, that's what it says in my little graph that I published. So.
I think that it's so accurate. I know, you know, so many people who tell me about, and I've had this experience too, where you can't have sex or intercourse, you can't have penetration after some surgery or something. And that opens up a whole world of creativity for you and your partner. And you can actually have the best sex when you're not doing that. And I also just, I like want to double click on what you said too about, like, I think so many men have such a script for sex, and just to break that script and to focus on being in service, I think will just, I mean, not only change the game for your partner, but really change the game for you, you know, and your ability to then like go back and really enjoy all these other aspects of sex that your script might be passing over and you're not even noticing.
The other side benefit for guys is that if you don't ejaculate all the time, you generally want to have a lot more sex, and you probably do have a lot more sex, which is actually chi building for both partners.
Right.
Because you're more interested and you don't get the ejaculation hangovers and like, hey, can we go again this afternoon? And things like that happen, which probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I talk about that with my partner. I've definitely been upset when I found out sometimes if he masturbates or something, you know, I know there's some people who are like, oh yeah, like, I don't feel like he's cheating on me or anything. I just want to make sure he's going to have energy for me later. Because it does impact his energy.
Is Dame going to make like a male chastity belt or something like that?
Probably not. probably
it says,
not. Look,
it says right on your blog, you make stuff for people with vulvas, but wouldn't that be something for people with vulvas? I mean,
it would be, in fact, like, you know, we are looking at things that are, you know, for penises, because ultimately, you know, 90% of vulva havers are having sex with somebody with a penis. So if we can change the, you know, it's partnered, you know, so it does matter. Either way, it's kind of for both people.
If you do come out with those, I'm going to laugh my ass off. I just have to say, because that came up in this survey.
I'll send you one. they certainly exist. But we really, you know, and to be honest, we're really focused on this, not necessarily because of the health or scientific backing, but we're focused on creating, you know, sexual wellness products that squarely fit into this idea of what sexual health is, because so much of what I'm doing is trying to change a narrative. So while I personally believe that a lot of BDSM, kink, fantasy products are, I'm positive they're healing. It's amazing what kink can do and fantasy can do. But, you know, like I'm currently in a lawsuit with the MTA, which is a New York City subway system. And I'm happy to tell you more about
what's going on there.
Okay. So they, we worked with them for like 6 months. They said they would run advertisements for us. And then when we sent in our advertisements, which they had approved, we made them, like we sent them like rough drafts of what it would look like. They said this was fine. We sent them the actual assets at the end. And they said, oh, you know, we would not and would never work with that, any sexually oriented business. Meanwhile, they're running advertisements for Hims, Roman, erectile dysfunction medication. They're running advertisements for breast enhancement, products that use sex to sell other things.
Wow, that doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right. So we made a fuss. The fuss didn't really go anywhere. And, you know, since the New York City subway system is a government agency, they actually have to be fair with their guidelines. You know, a lot of private agencies, they can decide like, oh, I'm going to work with you and not you for no reason except for the fact that I like you. Like Facebook could essentially do that, but the MTA can't. So we filed a lawsuit against them, and you know, there is an element of just public perception of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And I think making things like a chastity belt or, you know, handcuffs and spreader bars and all of these fun things that I think people should own really kind of does change how much we want to see it in the public sphere and how accessible it is to have the conversations. So it's definitely, that's why I will not make a chastity belt for you, Dave.
I wasn't asking for me. I was just thinking.
No, I think I could tell you really wanted it. No, I'm joking. I mean, for
only if it's comfortable. I mean, I wouldn't want it to itch it, as long as we could do that.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, there is a line there that's kind of getting blurred. So if you go back a long time ago, you know, you go to the adult bookstore and like no one would really talk about it. And there'd be, you know, all sorts of weird pervy people floating around and there was a wall of toys that were all, you know, crap to be perfectly honest.
A show in the back potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there may still be places like that, but I don't think there's that many of them because you know, there are people like, you know, this can actually be clean and normal. So like the line of acceptability over the last few decades really has shifted dramatically, like from when it was in the 60s and all these how I would imagine it was, to the point it is now. Where do you see it going, though? Like 10 years from now, are we going to be all, you know, teledildonics and, you know, remote control everything? Like, is it going to slow down? Is it going to just reach a comfortable thing? Or is it going to be spreader bars and all the other stuff you mentioned?
I think D, all of the above. Okay. You know, I do think that the category is changing. You can find our products in Urban Outfitters, Free People. We sell on Goop, Revolve. So we are in a lot of mainstream locations and are continuing to have conversations with mainstream retailers. And I do think that that will continue, like that, like beauty pharmacy space will continue to accept us more and more and bring us in. I very much focus on making wellness tools. So for me, like, I don't want to bring a screen in. I don't want to do too much tech. You know, we use technology to make simple toys that are intuitive, easy to use. They aren't necessarily the experience. Like, there are toys out there that become the experience, which is super fun. And I think that those also really have a place. But we're really trying to focus on creating tools that help people connect better with themselves or with a partner. So that's what we're doing. I do think, I like though, that teledildonics are just going to change the sex worker game too. And
that's true. And that's been going on for about 15, 20 years. Wired wrote about it when the very first generation came out. And it's an evolving space, but it's still pretty fringe. All right, I got to ask this now. That,
all of that is
new. That's true. That's
tech
all new.
Has really changed. Yeah, it's really cool.
Now, I'm just thinking about the Eva, too, the one that you wear. Is there anything stopping you from just wearing that when you're just out and about?
No. In fact, it's very fun to wear out and about. So it's, you know, between us. It doesn't currently have a remote, but that's definitely on something that we really want to do.
That would be in high demand. Kind of, yeah.
That would be, yes, it's definitely on the docket of things that's in development. But it... So you'd have to kind of just touch it to turn it on and turn it off, which would be like the one thing that could potentially hold you back. But I think turning it on and doing the dishes is a great idea. I highly recommend it. I think it's a really fun way to kind of just incorporate to teasing and play throughout the day. Yes, it's a good idea.
All right. I hadn't thought of that. You're like, it's to be worn during sex. I'm like, you can probably just wear it whenever you wanted to. All right. That's pretty cool. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
How do you get feedback from customers? I know you keep iterating and I'm always working on that for my companies as well. So but it seems like a lot of people be kind of awkward to be like, oh, it was, you know, to whatever. Are people just super open about their experiences with it? Or do you do surveys? Like, how does that work in an experience where people have a lot of kind of concern about talking about it?
Yeah. So we do surveys. So one, we prototype in-house predominantly. So we have a bunch of 3D printers and we will create products in-house. And we usually start off by team members trying things out in the bathroom, coming back, being like, oh, can we just tweak this, you know, one thing and being able to change it really quickly because of technology. We can rapidly prototype hardware products. And then we will send them out to, we have a community of Dame Labs members. These are people who love talking about vibrators and have explicitly signed up for this program to get testers. I mean, we usually also survey them too before we even get started. Like, what should we be making? What are your consumer pain points? And then we'll send out the prototypes, we'll get feedback, we'll iterate till we feel good about it, put it into production, and then we rely on reviews and we'll even call people up. So we've done everything from like getting on the phone with consumers to learn what they're liking, what they're not liking, to doing surveys. I mean, there's so many challenges. There's challenges of people not really understanding what they like and what they don't like. There's challenges of like just language about how to explain what you like and what you don't like and how to describe a buzzy sensation versus a rumbly sensation. So kind of helping people with the language and with the words, asking specific questions as well as open-ended questions has been really important for us. And yeah, I think it's like just part of the cycle, being able to open up the conversation and listen to our customers not only helps remove the shame and stigma, but it also helps me make better products that they like more. So it's really just like a win-win.
That's awesome. I love it that it's, you know, out of the dark and people are just saying, I want more of this, less of this, and that you're going out to make it.
Sorry, it's just amazing when you just ask a question and you're not shameful about it, how people are like, oh yeah, I guess I can also say clitoris. And then we're both just saying clitoris and it's fine. You know, just it's easy to remove the shame by leading without shame.
I want to know if you would name your cat clitoris.
It's kind of, yeah, I call it like Clitty for like short or something. Clitty kitty. I like that. That works.
You seem like someone who would have something funny in your house named after a body part. I don't know.
Yeah. True? I mean, I don't yet. Maybe my kid, you know, first one. yeah, no, it definitely, I would. I do think it's fun to say those words, though I'm also not, like there's other people out there in the education space who are anti-euphemism. I love a good euphemism. I think it's really fun to play with language. I think it's important that we can say the correct word and not feel like we're saying hoo-ha because we literally can't say vagina. But if you can say vagina and you also like saying hoo-ha, that's fantastic.
Now, tell me about Kegel exercises. I mean, you've studied a lot of stuff. Good, bad?
Yeah.
Like, walk me through that.
Okay, so there's like differing opinions on it. I think it really depends on the education you have for your Kegel exercises. So there's definitely some instances where if you're continuously doing Kegel exercises, you can just be working on tightening your pelvic floor muscles. And it's really important to learn how to loosen your pelvic floor muscles as well. So you want to be practicing not just strengthening, but also like elongating and stretching them. I'm like definitely doing them a little bit while we talk. So I do think that overall good, but the education and understanding around them is a little bit weak, and it is important to get the right to learn how to do them correctly, and to know that you can be doing them wrong and cause pain or cause more harm.
Got it. Definitely pelvic floor strength is an issue for men and women. When you have a strong pelvic floor, that's, you know, your
I
first
think
chakra.
That's the other thing I forget. Yeah, it's like your whole base is set on it. And I do always think I forget to talk about men too. I always think just about the pelvic floor for women, but really it's incredibly important for men as well.
I have a very weird device. No, it's not an insertable. That is for building pelvic floor strength in men and women that a friend of mine who's into Qigong told me I had to buy. And I'm thinking about sending it out in the next Dave Asprey box. Because it's such a powerful thing. Like I did this thing, it's 1 minute a day of a certain kind of squeezy exercise. And my posture straight. Like it was ridiculous. Like your head moves back because you just got the bottom of your pelvis there or your pelvic floor there. And of course it's a bigger issue for women, especially post-pregnancy with sneeze, peeing and all that. So there's all sorts of things that we're willing to talk about that no one would talk about 10 years ago, which is really cool. But it seems like there's value for Kegels. It's just, like you said, with any exercise, you might want to do it right.
Yeah, you just need to learn. But it's very, I think it's there's a lot of value there, you know. And like you've already said, it's not just sexual value. Like I think for so many of the things that we talk about when we're talking about sexual pleasure and sexual health, it goes beyond the bedroom. You know, like you literally have better alignment when you have a stronger foundation. You know, so I just think that makes so much sense. And to me, it also really translates to this idea that like when we understand ourselves sexually, we have like a stronger alignment throughout our whole being and our whole body as well. But I just might be being heady right now. I feel like I'm being heady with the right person.
There you go. No euphemisms there.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't even realize I'm doing them. You're very good at catching the puns. They're not even intentional.
My inner seventh grader is strong. And I don't think that's ever going to change.
Wonderful.
Now, I always ask guests who come on the show, like, shoot out a discount for listeners. And you were kind enough to do that. Dame Products, DAMEproducts.com/Dave. You can get 15% off. You did send me a pack of all your goodies. So thank you. Very high quality, useful, good stuff. I'm not going to do a full review here because I think Lana would probably punch me, but we'll just say that they're good. So thank you.
No problem. Yeah. And kind of going, you mentioned this earlier, but they are medical grade silicone. Almost all are, they're rechargeable. And yeah, this is a category that's not regulated. So be careful what you buy. And you know, the vulva is porous. It will suck that stuff right up.
It will indeed. You have for a couple of questions from our Upgrade Collective members?
I'm up for it.
Okay, Diane, you want to come on and ask your Upgrade question?
Sure. Okay, so my question is, with the device that you guys were talking about that you had originally started on Indiegogo, which I think is a fabulous site, by the way, I've done a lot of backing on that, but not back then because I didn't know about it. Are you going to do an upgrade? And if so, will it be through that format or on your own particular website?
So yeah, we are on EVA 2 now. So we've already upgraded the product and we're going to continue to upgrade it. We have not really been using crowdfunding sites anymore to launch our products. For no real good reason. I mean, it's just simpler. It's just really like logistics. It's easier for us to just do everything for our own website. It's probably better for SEO. But, you know, as you bring it up, I am like, man, that platform did so much for us and we reached so many people. I wonder if we should tap back into like where we started. I bet we could reach new people. And yeah, I really did, but we don't like need it for cash flow reasons anymore. I think one of the reasons why that site is so powerful is because you can get money before you make the product, before you do tooling, before you pay your manufacturers. And we're kind of, you know, mature enough with our cash flow where we don't need that. I don't need to ask customers to pay so far in advance. But the community is so powerful that I would consider it again.
It's a good way for very young companies to get funded. It's harder for companies that are established. I mean, you've built a real brand and all. So if you go out there, it adds a lot of complexity. So I probably wouldn't launch a new bulletproof product there. But for one of my smaller companies, would I do it? I might, just as an entrepreneur. You always kind of balance it out.
Yeah. It really is an amazing marketing tool in and of itself, though, in a way where I'm like, oh, maybe, you know, if they were willing to also really promote my launch, maybe that is a reason why I would do it. Of course, like they take a percentage that like I don't need that community anymore. And I think the other thing that's really challenging is when you get all this press, I want those links to go to my website. I don't want the links to go to Indiegogo. Because then all of those links live there forever and those links are really valuable for my SEO. So those would be all the things I think through. But I love Indiegogo. I also think crowdfunding for equity is a really fascinating and an exciting tool for the future, especially a way of democratizing like who I get to make money for. But now I'm kind of off the question and into La La Land.
Into entrepreneur land.
Yeah.
Let's do another question from Brandon, and we'll just be quiet while he asks this question so we don't get an echo. Brandon was asking about various types of orgasms. You want to ask that one, Brandon?
Yeah. So I know that your device is about a clitoral stimulation, and if I am correct, there are different types of orgasms, and there's the coveted, I know that a variety is probably good, but there's like the coveted whole body orgasm, which I got close to that nirvana. I got close to it, but then I didn't quite get it. But anyway, what do you think about those different types? And also, I wanted to know your thoughts on foreskin. as well. So a bit of a controversial thing to just throw in there. Okay.
Oh my God. I'm so excited about these questions. Okay. So one, yes, there is like the blended orgasm or a full body orgasm. There are lots of different classifications that people have put on different types of orgasms. Ultimately, there's not like so much science around this, but you know, in women, you know, you have the clitoral organ, which goes mostly external, not mostly externally. Externally is really kind of just the iceberg, but it's this highly sensitive part. And then it has like an internal structure that does touch the vaginal canal. And I have definitely experienced and hear people talk all the time about when you stimulate both internal, like when you're stimulated both internally and externally, you can have a fuller, richer orgasm, which people call a blended orgasm. Using a toy like mine while you're having sex is more likely to help you achieve that. I do think though that, you know, a lot of this stuff is based on conversations and subjective experiences versus like really fully understanding like what is happening in our bodies. So that, and I've also mostly heard this language talked about for women. I know that a lot of men do talk about prostate orgasms in a way that feels subjectively different for them and oftentimes more powerful. But that is the information I have to bring to the table. Maybe Dave has some too. And then foreskin. So I am a New York Jew, and this is a hot topic in my community, especially as I am pregnant. I think that we would need a lot of good evidence to show why we should cut something off of our bodies. And I don't really personally believe that the evidence is there. I have read a study that also reported that women reported better sex with uncircumcised men. And I also really do kind of feel like it's a protective sheath, that it's kind of almost like it almost creates like a womb for men, which I think is really beautiful. There is also there is science that also shows that having foreskin can increase your risk of STDs and STIs. So I don't want to just ignore that. That research is out there. A lot of that research has been done in Africa, where I think like the context is different. My personal belief is like you should do what you think is right. I do think that there is a big change happening in what's happening to newborns. And I do think it's one of those things that like if aliens came down to like meet this new society, and then we had to explain that we were cutting off a piece of our, like it was a tag that we've just decided we didn't need, they'd be like, that is so weird. Like, why do you do that? I guess overall, I don't intend on doing that to my son if I have a son. And those are my thoughts.
At the risk of offending anyone or another, male genital mutilation is wrong. And if a guy wants to cut his foreskin off, he should be able to do it when he's 18. And it's okay to just say that. And yes, I am circumcised, by the way.
Yeah. But
that's what we used to do. There's good evidence it is traumatic for little boys. Putting baby through trauma is a bad idea because trauma sticks and then you have to deal with it later. So the nicer we are to little babies, even if they don't really have the musculature or the ability to really fight back, they don't like it. So I would say
there's even some research that they feel pain more intensely. Of course, I think that ultimately it's really hard to know their pain as they cannot speak. But yeah, Dave, way to say it.
Well, one of the guys in the Upgrade Collective, I'm not going to name him in case he doesn't want to talk about it, is actually regrowing his foreskin in a lab with a company called Foragen, because, and there are some guys who are doing that, saying, you know, this is a part of my anatomy that's useful. And in terms of reducing risk of, they said, you know, penis cancer and other things like that, if you cut off your arms, you have less risk of arm cancer too, but that doesn't mean that you should cut them off. So that seems like bad science to me.
And they also say that there's like more UTIs and newborns, but it's also like, well, learn how to clean a little bit, you know, like there's, I think, especially if we were cutting a piece of our bodies off, like there might just be some knowledge that we've lost too about how to just take care of this part of our body. So, but I'm all, I think, how can we go around saying it's so awful to cut off parts of vulvas and then not consider what we're doing tonight?
Fair is fair.
Yeah.
I'm with you there. I didn't think we're going to get into that, but I think it's an important conversation, especially for parents, right? And look, if you decide to do it, there's pretty clear evidence that guys turn out okay if they don't have their foreskin. Right? It's not the end of the world either way, right? But in terms of just like taking the best path for a baby, I think the science is pretty clear on it. And a lot of the studies, you know, saying there's a benefit there. The benefits are very small, and they are looking at the downside.
I agree.
Cool.
And there's a lot of like, I hear men say all the time that they're worried about too, like, oh, it's going to look different. And they just, the reasons I hear for pro circumcision are so socially constructed.
Yeah. I guess to make it look a certain way, there's all sorts of plastic surgeries and weird stuff like that. But when it comes down to pleasure, from what I've read, there's definitely some nerves that you're losing there that are probably good for a male's pleasure. So if that's the consideration, but I really do appreciate the curiosity plus engineering aspect that you're bringing just to the whole conversation. It's all right. Like, how do we make something that people want to use that increases pleasure? Because when you can increase pleasure, you're actually increasing people's happiness and satisfaction in life in general. So, you know, whether or not you've got a foreskin or, you know, anything else, like, hey, what's the sum total of things that you can do alone or with a partner that's actually going to work, not just for orgasm, but just for pleasure? I think there's value to that, and just doing it in a way you could sell at Urban Outfitters. It's actually really cool. It's normalizing a normal behavior that should have always been something that was okay, that we just
when people talk, oh my God, people talk about like how I'm mainstreaming the industry. It's like, first of all, over 50% of people already use vibrators, right? So that is mainstream, and it's sex. It's literally how we all exist. So it's mainstream, you know, it's wild. It's wild that something so foundational to our existence is considered so taboo to even discuss.
Well, thank you for making good stuff. Thank you for studying it in university, getting good with it. And thank you for telling the MTA to stuff it with their stuffiness, because that's stupid. And I hope you win.
Thanks, Dave. I hope I win too. It's looking pretty good.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I loved learning too here. So it was really fun for me as well.
Cool. You guys got the code earlier, dameproducts.com/Dave. Get 15% off. The wearable one can be a lot of fun. That's the Eva 2, right? That's its name?
Yes, it's the Eva.
Okay,
yeah.
Eva 2. Full recommendation there. And thanks again. I hope you enjoyed the live questions. I'm really enjoying the Upgrade Collective. They're here on video, and I'm doing little side chats with them during this, and they're asking some good questions. So thanks, guys, from the Upgrade Collective. And if you're listening to this, you'd love to be part of the live audience and learn all the stuff that I know, including some of the weird stuff we just talked about, ourupgradecollective.com. I'll see you guys there. And I'll also probably see you on dameproducts.com, because I might be ordering something else.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
All right. Much appreciated. Guys on Upgrade Collective, hang on for a second here. I'll take a couple of questions with you guys over video, but we'll end our official podcast first. All right, well, thanks. That was fun.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.